Our gospel for this morning is from Luke's gospel, chapter 9, verses 28 through 36. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. And behold, two men, Moses and Elijah, were talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. But when they were fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my Son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen.
So, I'm not a football fan at all. I don't like it. I don't watch it. So, unlike in some churches where you might get to hear sermons that are peppered with sports illustrations almost every week, you get it all in one shot today. I understand the Super Bowl was kind of disappointing. I do know this that much this year. So, this morning I'm giving you a chance to think more about the game, even though I am slightly aware that probably a basketball sermon would be more appropriate at this time of year. I do have one of those, too, so you may hear that one day. So just one, though, you know. In 1894, football was being played at Gallaudet University, or Gallaudet University, the first college for the deaf. As the team stood on the field planning their next play, quarterback Paul Hubbard realized that as he was telling his team in American Sign Language, that it could be seen and overheard by the opponents. So he gathered his team into a tight circle in order to hide his hand signals before the play. That little circle was soon adopted by football teams everywhere as the best way to communicate on the field, and so the huddle was invented. 1900 years earlier, before anyone ever thought of football, there was an historic huddle preceding the greatest play the world ever saw. Jesus Christ went up onto a mountain and stood in a huddle with the two best players to precede him. We read in verse 30 of our text, "And behold, two men were talking with him, Moses and Elijah." The Christian church has long called this huddle on a mountaintop the transfiguration of Jesus because of the amazing transformation in his appearance. And then I think I've got here, let's see, do we have, there we go. This was on the traditional site for this. We don't really know which mountain it was. The traditional site is Mount Tabor, and that's a picture of Mount Tabor. I don't think that big Hollywood type sign is actually there. Here's a looking at it from the distance. Here's the road up, which looks like quite a road. And then here's the church and other buildings that are at the top of Mount Tabor. And then here's a viewpoint up there that may look a little bit more like it did when Jesus and the disciples were up there. And we'll just keep that up, Carl, and got a couple more after a while. Jesus prayed there on the mountain. And his hidden glory as the Son of God began to leak out to be revealed in his physical form. So we mark this Sunday in the church calendar for a couple of reasons. First, because the transfiguration is a miraculous confirmation of who Jesus is, the glorious Son of God. And second, we remember the transfiguration as a major turning point in the story. It's here on this mountain that the play Jesus came to run was confirmed as the fulfillment and completion of everything God had done up until then. In the calendar of the church year, Transfiguration Sunday marks the end of the season of Epiphany and gets us ready for the season of Lent. It moves us from weeks of celebrating the light and glory of Jesus to a harder, darker time, a season to remember that the greatest glory of Jesus is to be found on a road marked with humiliation, suffering, and a gruesome death. The huddle on the Mount of Transfiguration is not just for those two shining figures who walked out of the pages of the Old Testament. As Jesus talked with Moses and Elijah about what he was about to do, you and I ought to listen as well and learn something of the great plan for our own lives. We're meant to join the huddle. There were people like you and me up on the mountain. Jesus had taken along his three closest disciples, Peter, John, James. Verse 28 says he took them with him to pray. And even before Elijah and Moses appeared, Jesus did not choose to be alone, but to pray together with others, to huddle with three friends who walked with him. That first huddle of the three disciples and Jesus did not last very long. As we discover in verse 32, Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. Jesus must have prayed for hours. They couldn't stay awake. Their eyelids grew heavy. Their heads drooped. They let themselves slump sideways. They drifted off to sleep there on the rocky ground. As you may remember, this was not the last time this would happen. In a few weeks, just before Easter, we'll remember how those same three men fell asleep again while Jesus prayed, then in a lonely place called Gethsemane. Peter, John, and James really were like you and me, or at least like me. I fall asleep too. Weak and weary, they closed their eyes just before everything exciting was ready to start. They gave up when this business of praying with Jesus got too long and tiring. Their eyes were closed when Jesus' face began to change and grow brighter. They did not see the transformation of his garment from dingy gray and brown linen, cheap linen, into white so pure that Mark says no bleach on earth could produce it. They were insensible when those two other bright figures appeared with Jesus and began to converse with him. In other words, they almost completely missed that awesome huddle between three spiritual giants. They were asleep. Being a disciple of Jesus has its moments of glory. Occasionally, you and I find ourselves on a mountain with the Lord. His light is dazzling. There's a stunning answer to prayer, and we realize that he's near. We receive strength to overcome temptation and feel his power. We see a sunrise and are overwhelmed with the beauty of creation. And in those times when we feel forgiveness and restoration after falling into sin, we experience again the fullness of his grace. Brilliant, shining moments. But in between them, we often find long, hard days and hours of just trying to be faithful in prayer, in Bible study, in service to others. We just slog along the spiritual road. And it can be pretty hard not to just grow weary and fall asleep, like Peter in the huddle on the mountain. Part of our struggle and weariness is a misconception about what should come out of our spiritual huddles. True football fans among us, that's not me, remember, wouldn't think this about the huddles they watch on television or from the bleachers. But the spiritual misconception is that when we've really huddled well, the plays that follow will be spectacular. A long bomb into the end zone, a quarterback sneak that goes all the way, a clever reverse that draws the defense to one side while a handoff is made to a receiver who takes it all the way down the field on the other side. Spiritually, we seem to expect major gains on every play, some deep insight every time we read the Bible, a thrilling sense of God's presence whenever we sing praise songs, clear and beautiful answers to our prayers, news of many converts from our missionaries. But football fans know that isn't how it works in their game. Lots of plays are just grunt work, a short pass for a few yards, a two-yard push up the middle with defenders all over the ball carrier. Over and over, just holding on to the ball and trying to move it forward a little bit. That's more like a lot of Christian life. Moving inches forward, only a little at a time, waiting patiently for that rare miracle play and not being disappointed when it doesn't happen. We even go backwards, the spiritual equivalent of lost yardage or a punt. That's more like reality, both in football and in faith. When Jesus and Moses and Elijah huddled together on the Mount of Transfiguration, they talked about the play which Jesus was going to run. Of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, only Luke gives us an inkling that the big play was part of that conversation. Look at the word that Luke chose to describe what Jesus would do. Verse 31 says, "They appeared in glory," that's Moses and Elijah, "and were speaking about his departure, which he was to accomplish at Jerusalem." That's a strange word for this play. Departure. We tend to think of what Jesus accomplished as salvation, as resurrection, as new and glorious life. And it is all those things. But he only accomplished all that via a departure. He was going to Jerusalem to depart life, to die on the cross in the horrible way that criminals were often executed by the Roman Empire. If you go to where I spent 5 years of my life, the University of Notre Dame, you will see a huge portrait of Jesus on the side of the 14-story Hesburgh Library building. It's a wonderful mosaic of the resurrected Lord, and here's a close-up of it. Coming out of the tomb, arms outstretched in his great victory over sin, over death, over the devil. A procession of all the saints and scholars of history are represented around and beneath him, following Jesus as the living word, their first guide to truth. Many of you know that mural at Notre Dame has a nickname based on the fact that it is visible from the football stadium, or at least it used to be. They've got a new stadium. Rising above one end zone. Those outstretched, upraised arms seem to mirror a referee's arms raised to declare a touchdown. And so that great Christian piece of art is fondly known as Touchdown Jesus. What I want us to realize now as we read this story of Transfiguration is that our Lord only gets to be Touchdown Jesus on the other side of a long, slow, painful push down a field toward goalposts shaped like a cross. He did not win through some great demonstration of divine skill and power. He won by leaving the field, a departure, a death. Jesus only held his arms up in glorious victory after his arms were stretched out for him on the cross. That's the grand play those three shining figures discussed on the mountain. Not a triumphant entrance into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, not a glorious ascension into heaven a few weeks later, but a departure into the darkness of death. Don't get me wrong, he still touched down Jesus. The power of God raised our Lord out of darkness and death and gave him the greatest victory in history. Jesus' arms in heaven are raised high in triumph, and the joy of the new life he gained, not just for himself, but for anyone who accepts it. He's alive and leading that grand procession of all his people. He is the living word, the source and beginning of all truth. So if you trust him and follow him, he's going to bring you safely to the goal, to join in a great end zone celebration that will last forever. He's already run the play. The game is won. You just need to get out of the stands and onto the field to join him. But that's where it gets more complicated than football. The word departure here in Greek is actually exodus. Can you hear it? Here was Moses, the leader of the great exodus of God's people from bondage to Egypt, talking to the one who would accomplish a greater exodus. Moses led Israel into a great but difficult departure from their old lives so that God could save them from slavery. Now here's Jesus leading us into a great but difficult exodus from life itself, so that God can save us from sin. Jesus died in a great exodus for our salvation. To receive it, you and I are invited forward into our own exodus, our own dying, our own cross. Right before those moments of glory on the mountain, if you back up in the text, though they didn't understand it, Jesus told his disciples very clearly what the play was, both for himself and for them. Back in verse 22, he predicted his own death. He said he had to suffer. He had to be rejected. He had to be killed. Only then would he be raised again to life. In verse 23, he applied that same strategy to you and me. He said, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. You don't get the glory without the cross. Mountaintop experiences can fool us into thinking that's not true. It sure fooled Peter. He saw all that glory shining around him, Moses and Elijah and Jesus, and probably thought he had arrived. This was the end of the game. Touchdown. It was all over but the celebration. And so Peter told Jesus in verse 33, Master, it's good for us to be here. Let's make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. Let's sit here in the glory. This is a good thing. This is what we signed on for. Let's just stay here. But it wasn't time to stay. It was time to depart. Notice what Luke says about Peter in a little parenthesis there, not knowing what he said. He didn't know. Neither do we, whenever we start to imagine we can just stay where we are and have the glory without the cross. The only way to the goal line is down a long, hard field filled with mean opponents and lots of hard knocks. That's what it means for the salvation Jesus accomplished to be a departure. So what should we do? We're not in a scrimmage. Our opponents are not pushovers. Getting anywhere spiritually is constant struggle. It's tempting to give up, to go look for a different game to play. Maybe find a church where he's always touched down Jesus and they've forgotten how he got there. But I don't believe you want to do that. You want to follow the living word, the great Lord of truth, whose true word to us is that if we follow, if we carry our own cross, if we stay in the game, he will bring us across the goal line. In the meantime, we keep playing. We take direction from Jesus, our quarterback. We come together to learn the plays and receive our assignments in the game plan. The end of the text says a cloud came over the mountaintop. And in that cloud, they heard a voice which told them simply, "This is my son, my chosen one. Listen to him." When the voice was done and the cloud was gone, they were there with Jesus, just Jesus. That's the huddle we aim for when we come here to worship on Sunday morning. It's that huddle we try to create in a Sunday school class, in a home fellowship, in our singers practice, in a prayer group. It's any time we sit down with others and read the word, pray over it, and listen. We do exactly what Peter, James, and John were told. Listen to him. Listen to Jesus. Listen together in a huddle, whether it's 3 or 30. Join together to hear his word and thereby learn how to run the next play you face. I don't know what stretch of field you're looking down right now. I can't quite picture what big, ugly brute of an opponent is crouching there to knock you to the ground when the ball snapped. You know. You may just be trying to hold position with your rebellious child for another day. You may be attempting an in run around conflict at work. You might be struggling to carry the ball through one more week of a difficult marriage. Your opponent could be physical pain that never goes away. It could be mental darkness and depression that saps all your energy. You could be bent over looking straight into the eyes of a hulking big temptation that just grins evilly at you. You could have any combination of these opponents I've named on the line to block you, or others waiting downfield to tackle you. I don't know, but you do. That's why the huddle. That's why we're here, to hear what Jesus says through his word and through the rest of his team. We're here to remember how the game is really played. It's not a clear field before us, not a stroll to the goal. So we're here to slap each other on the back, offer encouragement and support, and even run interference for each other. Jesus calls us into a huddle that only works when we play together as a team. It's in that huddle, in that team, that we find the only hope we have in this game we call life. As the Father said to Peter, John, and James, listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to him. Learn his word, huddle around his word, and take it into your life. Moses was there. God spoke through the law. Elijah was there. God spoke through the prophets. Now Jesus is here, and he speaks through his son. His apostles wrote down what Jesus said, and his word is in this book. What he says is the truth. Listen to him. We're here to remember that the game can be won and has already been won for us. Jesus stood in holy, awesome glory on that mountain. Shining in him was all the strength and skill needed to win. After a grueling game, he stood up again in even more glory outside a little grave. And because he's alive, he is here among us now. He knows how to play, so we listen to him. And he calls us to pick up our crosses and run with them. But he runs with us and stands before us. When we do come to the end, when we cross that line, we will see his glory. And we'll see the wonderful, glorious arms of Jesus stretched up in victory and stretched out to gather us in. Amen.